Do you enjoy pain?
The film.
Don't hurt.
Alright, so here's my problem with this. I've complained before that we do the show too late, right? We do it at 8 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
So I'm very excited because California has a time change and Arizona does not. So I figure, alright, well, now I will be recording at 7 o'clock and Dylan will be recording at 8 o'clock, right? Only Dylan sends me a text today and says, hey, how about we record at 7:30? Will that make you happy? And then I just realized you made it later for yourself because you're recording at 8:30. Which is ideal for you, but what you've done is psychologically you convinced me we're going earlier, but the time change has happened, so theoretically, my body is still accustomed to 8:30, so we're actually taping this a half hour later.
Except that we're not.
Except that we totally are. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Film Don't Hurt. I am one of your hosts, Kai, co-founder of ManILoveFilms.com, and host of the MILFcast. Joining me is...
Dylan Fields, co-founder of ManILoveFilms as well. I still don't get how you're blaming me for the fact that your time changed and mine didn't. Are we not recording it a half hour earlier than we normally do according to Pacific time?
According to the time, but according to my body, it is 8:30 right now. You've actually got an extra half hour out of me.
Okay, so how long are you going to keep that excuse up for? When does your body acclimate?
I went to a wedding this weekend. I slept 2 hours on Saturday. I have not got to. Here's the bullshit thing: the time change is supposed to provide you with more time at night. That is, of course, if you get that extra hour of sleep. If you go to bed at, say, I go to bed at 9 o'clock. If I were to go to bed at 8 o'clock on Sunday, then I would enjoy that time change. I would get that extra hour. However, the problem is I don't. I still go to bed at 9 o'clock because that's when the clock tells me to go to bed. Psychologically, it's fucking with me.
Yeah.
And I don't get that extra hour. All I get to do is go into work an extra hour later, so I get the same fucking amount of sleep, but I go to bed at like a different time that is actually the same time.
So you're making it sound as though Arizona, consistently mocked for its lack of time change, is actually better?
No, I'm not doing that, because it's dark at 5:30 here, and I love it. It's my favorite time of year. But let's get into movies, Dylan. Okay, so here's the thing. We decided that every week on the show... We would switch off. I'd come up with an idea. You'd come up with an idea. That person would lead the show. This is my week. But once again, we're doing a Dylan idea, because what I've realized is Dylan is Mr. Idea and I am Captain Filibuster.
Is that how it works?
Yes, totally. And Mr. Idea and Captain Filibuster would be a great like 80s sitcom.
Which one am I again? I'm Mr. Idea? Okay. Can I be like Captain Idea or Wizard Idea or... I don't know.
Okay.
Doctor Idea.
Doctor Idea, and
Captain Filibuster.
That's cool. There's like a superhero dynamic to it. Yeah, I like that a lot.
But I'm a little surprised to hear you say that.
Doctor sounds smart.
Because, exactly. Aren't you the same guy that is infamous for the phrase, well, let me ask you this.
Let me ask you this. That's filibustering.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds like ideas. I had an idea about something. Let me ask you this. Or is it just, when you say, let me ask you this, it really means I'm going to talk for 3 minutes? Is that what that means?
Oh, when I talk, it usually is going to last at least 3 minutes. But it's not that I have an idea, it's that I have a thought. I have a thought on an idea. And I'm taking that and spinning it.
Okay.
Whatever. All right. Here's the deal. First of all, before we go on, I want to say we've got some, I've been doing my other podcast for a long time. You have as well. I occasionally get very nice responses, and I'm sure I get more – I know I get more downloads of my other podcast than I do of this one. This one is just kind of coming out of the gate. However, we have got like an overwhelming kind of response of like very positive tweets and messages about how this podcast is going, and I just want to say thanks to everybody that's been listening and checking this out, and we're having a fun time doing it. Would you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly with your sentiments. Yes, this is – as you put it, I don't know if I agree, the boxcar racer to your Blink 182. I was thinking about that the other day. How about this is the Led Zeppelin to your Yardbirds?
How about this is the plus 44 to my Blink 182? Is that even worse?
I don't even know what that is. So it must be worse. Okay.
This is my kick-ass side project. Okay, this is my...
This is your audio slave to...
This is my Jack White to my White Stripes. My Jack White solo to my White Stripes. How's that?
Except it's not solo. Anyway, we're... What are we talking about today, Kai?
An interesting quote, Dylan. I don't know. You tell everybody who came up with the idea.
Okay, I will do that. I see these things and I pull them from the sky because they make such great potential topics for Kai to filibuster about. This one came a few weeks back in an interview with the Coen brothers. And I'll read you the interviewer's question and then their answer. You make movies that are released by studios and win Oscars, yet on some level, you are still not mainstream guys. It's kind of a contradictory position. To which Joel says, yeah, I know. You know, we've talked about that ourselves. It's weird. Ethan says, yeah, if you'll pardon me, the indie thing might all just be a journalist's thing. James Cameron makes huge movies that are what he wants to do, and they're financed and released by studios. Indie is like a term of praise that you use for us, fortunately, and some of you bash Jim Cameron for not being, although he kind of is. So I guess I wanted to talk to you about what the definition of independent filmmaker, independent film is in this day and age. And I realize it's kind of along the same lines of a prior discussion we've had on just, you know, the whole future of film and technology and all that. So it kind of bleeds into that. But at the same time, I think there's some topics to be explored.
I would totally agree. First of all, can we just fucking say that they're wrong about James Cameron? James Cameron does not. James Cameron is the antithesis of an independent filmmaker.
Are you sure?
I should say,
what are you basing that on? Because I read that and I say, yes, they're totally right. James Cameron, George Lucas, those guys are independent filmmakers. At least okay. in on the basest of levels, where they're financing it, they have control. I mean, a studio might distribute it, but the spirit of independent filmmaking, it does sound ridiculous to say, is what they are doing.
Well, first of all, doesn't a studio distribute everything? Be it something as small as Magnet or something as large as Universal? Ultimately, doesn't a film need distribution from some form of studio?
Well, again, this is where I say it kind of bleeds into that other discussion, because I was thinking about that myself. And what really, in kind of a general term, do we think of as studio versus independent? You know, like, you've had independent filmmakers on the MILFcast. You've had Blaine Weaver of 6 Month Rule and J.C. Curry of The Pill. Are they independent filmmakers? Because they are eventually going through a studio. But I think you have to look at how it's being made in the first place and separate that from how you end up seeing it. And that's kind of where the distinction comes in. Or at least that's where it used to come in. The lines are getting blurry.
Yeah, the problem is what you're talking about in that quote, what they're talking about in that quote is like the heart of an independent filmmaker versus what an independent filmmaker is. First of all, I don't think an independent filmmaker goes into it with distribution. I feel like James Cameron has gotten to a point now where he has distribution deals on his name alone. Avatar's going to get distribution.
Yeah, they have those deals before they make a film, sure.
So that is not independent. Independent came from the idea of being independent from the studio system, right?
But they're making it independently. They're not reliant upon the studio for financing or for any kind of feedback of that.
They are. James Cameron may have $200 million to get a film, but he's not putting $200 of his own million into a film. You know what I mean? And he's not making...
His own companies?
I don't think so. I think Lucas is.
To you, Lucas is. Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah, Lucas is. And you, credit where it's due. Coppola, Scorsese, Spielberg, Lucas, they all came from that school of those young guys that were making independent films. I mean, American, well, maybe not even American, but like THX 1138?
Yeah.
Independent film?
I don't know enough about Lucas's individual history to know how much control he had at that point.
True. The everything that clouded this was the movement of the 90s, right?
Yeah. I mean,
so I think that's kind of where you have to start.
We could, for the sake of not going 100 years back or anything like that, yeah.
Yeah, no. Let's not, because as far as I'm concerned, film stopped in 1970, or started, whatever.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was the big boom of independent filmmaking when people really just made money, made films by themselves, and eventually went to film festivals, which were also taking off at the same time, and then later were purchased.
Well, and we're in a funny position now, because, like, okay, here we are. I've got a kid that's almost 14. I've got one that's 11. When they were young, when they were born, there wasn't technology readily available like there is now. Like, people can go make a film with an iPhone now. It was different then. You had to invest. You had to process film. And what we had is this generation in the 90s that found a way to either find independent financing. I just mixed financing with financier. Financing. I did it again. God damn it. My point is, they got independent financing to go make something low budget. Or in the particular situations like Il Mariachi or something like Primer, they went out and shot on shoestring. Like, I think, what was El Mariachi? $7,000?
Something like that, yeah.
$7,800, something like
that. Clerks, $25,000.
Yeah, which was all credit card debt. Primer, I think, was around the same price as El Mariachi, if not Clerks.
Yeah.
I want to say it was closer to El Mariachi. That's what we grew up with, the label of that being an independent film. Basically, you did it on your own with the own money that you could get by asking family and friends and stuff like that for money. And then in the last years, what we've seen is that, just like Comic-Con, things like Sundance have become overrun with the studios and shit, and you're starting to see them up the ante. So now we're seeing independent films that cost $1 million, $3 million, $6 million. So for me, it always seemed like you went out and did it on your own, and then you introduced it in the world, and then some of those films kind of found steam. But now you're into a world like, where's the independent cutoff come? Because for me, independent kind of fell down to money. I'll be honest. It came down to money. And you've got – but the gray area there is a $4 million film an independent? Okay. Is a $5 million not?
It's not just come down to money. It comes down to where the money came from. And what are the strings attached to that money if it came from outside of the filmmaker's family and friends and any, you know, fundraising that they had done on their own?
Okay.
That's where I draw the line. Because what you're talking about, yes, it gets into this other thing, which I kind of wanted to bring up, which is the boutique or art house arms of the studios. Because
yes, which many have fallen by the wayside, in fairness.
Right, but it's important to talk about them, because I think for the last 15 to 20 years, a lot of what we have called independent films is actually coming from them. So really, how independent is it? And that gets into what you're talking about with the $1 and $3 and $5 million independent films that are produced. Those, I think you would agree with me, at their basis level again, were not really independent films. They were micro-budget films produced by the quote-unquote independent arms of the studios.
Mm-hmm. So, which also had to work within budget constraints. I'm sure they were given maybe...
Right.
Whereas Warner Brothers might have, let's say, $300 to $600 million a year to spend on a film budget, on film budgets for their entire slate for the year.
Sure.
Magnet, or what was, like, Fox Searchlight, some of the off-brands.
Even Lionsgate back in the day.
Yeah, might have been given 12 and had to put out 5 films or something like that.
Yeah. Focus.
You know? So, Sony, yeah, Focus.
Sony Classics.
And how many of those are still around? I feel like half of those are gone now.
Well, I just read something not too long ago that I guess one of the founders or leaders of Focus was fired. And people are looking at that as a sign that those days are truly over, because Focus was, like, one of the really successful boutique ones that had managed to stick around for a long time and still maintain its independence, quote-unquote.
Yeah, and you know what? All those places – well, see, here's the problem is we got kind of spoiled, because we did have, again, a lot like the Spielberg-Coppola thing, we had this generation of filmmakers come in, like Rodriguez, Smith, Tarantino. There were many more. They kind of spoiled us. And what happened was we got a flooding of the market of these independent dramas and comedies and stuff that were not of the same caliber of talent. Essentially, it comes down to fucking talent. If you give somebody with talent $1 million or $100 million, they're going to make good films. That doesn't always transfer over. Kevin Smith did much better with, you know, a few million than he ever did with 25 or 30. You know what I mean? But I don't know. The weird thing now is, though, the boutiques are dead. And it's not that It's not that the fucking independent is killed out so much. It's that the boutiques, like you put it, have died out. The problem is, it seems now that we have this range of filmmaking that falls within $10 to $30 million, and then there's these $60 to $150 million movies, or even $200 million movies, like Man of Steel. What really suffered was those boutique films, and even that, like, mid-range. Like, do you see a lot of the mid-range $50 million romantic comedies anymore?
No, those don't get made much anymore. Those are called adult films for adults, and those are the ones that get pushed to the sidelines.
Yeah, and I guess my whole point was, like, with that flooding of the market, we got a lot of shit of these $1, $2, $3 million movies that came through. I have dozens of them in my DVD case that had, you know, talented either directors attached to them or decent talent that never materialized with, like, a decent product. And so, like, that whole thing got wiped off the slate, just like that mid-range movie got wiped off the slate.
Probably because the studios or their boutique arms went into the film festivals and spent too much and didn't end up making enough back. So yeah. It became not profitable.
You must have a bunch too, right?
Well, give me an example of what you're talking about.
Oh, God, I don't know. You remember the girl that starred in the movie 13? No, not the girl that starred in it. She was the friend and she wrote 13?
No.
Well, I have a movie with her and Carrie Ann Moss and Alec Baldwin, and it was kind of like a Lolita movie, and it was kind of interesting, and the talent was very good, especially for an independent film, but it just wasn't that good a film. I've got dozens of those in my DVD case, you know? And the shit thing was, we spent years, like, back when there were video stores, kids, we would go in and buy those up on, like, the sale racks because we'd had so much promise from films like Desperado and Pulp Fiction and shit like that. And, well, Reservoir Dogs. Pulp's not even really an independent film, I guess. Is it?
I don't know. I know it was released by Miramax, who was still independent at the time.
If anything, they're the one... They're the mainstream boutique brand that stuck.
Except because they were later purchased by Disney.
True, but out of that came the Weinstein Company, and they still put out interesting films like The Artist and shit like that, or Boondock Saints, you know? Well, that might have been Miramax, but you get my point.
Boutique films. but that goes back to your point of them still being a studio. Because they are not the filmmakers. They are still they're doing acquisitions and budgeting.
True.
And financing.
What? But the Weinsteins always struck me as somebody that
was on the filmmaker's side.
Was on the filmmaker's side and was spending the fat cat's money to put out a good product. Or even, like, maybe provide the artist with a little more cash than most other places could to give them a better opportunity to tell their story. They always seemed like they were in it for the Oscar or for the telling the best story. They never seemed consumed with me seem consumed with, like, trying to be obsessed with money in any way.
I don't know if I'd go that far. I'm sure they're absolutely obsessed with money.
Oh, yeah.
And there's still two sides to something like them, just as it is with all the boutique ones, which is that there was a side of them that still produced films internally, of which they, you know, something like a Shakespeare in Love, which, mm-hmm. you know, they said, okay, you got a $10 or $20 million budget, and this, you're going to make it, and blah, 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 blah. And then there's still the ones they go out and buy. The ones that go out and buy are the ones that we would still call independent. So in terms of those, I think they absolutely do still exist. I wanted to read one other thing to you and get your thoughts on it. It's from a site called IndieWood Hollywoodn't. And okay. It's talking about defining independent cinema, basically kind of what we're talking about here. And in the end of it, they say, they give a whole big long history of what that term independent cinema has meant over, 100 years. And it says, so now with the abridged history lesson of independent film under our belt, let's revisit our initial question, what is an independent film? Well, in reality, there exist varying levels of independence. What it really boils down in the end is control. The ability of a filmmaker who has a vision and is able to stick to that vision with no compromises. A studio may partly fund or distribute a director's film, and yet it can still bear the title as a quote-unquote independent. With some level of studio involvement, the end result may look more polished or reach a wider audience, but if the director's singular vision remains intact, in my opinion, it's independent.
Yeah, but how often does that happen? I mean, with all due respect, like, I want to say Kill Bill was like where they gave what's that thing they put in a contract that's like you can never get? Well, Final Cut. It was Final Cut. I remember Tarantino got Final Cut on Kill Bill. That's why it ended up being like Volume 1 and 2. Because they wanted it really down to one film, and he said no, and they decided to separate it into two films. But, like, that really doesn't fucking happen, does it? I mean, there's literally a handful of people operating within the studio system that probably have that kind of pull.
Right. But then I think you're getting back to the Camerons and Lucases. And I was also going to ask you...
I wouldn't even go that far. I'd go Spielberg's about the only guy I could think operating that probably has that kind of pull.
But Spielberg, meanwhile, going back to another previous discussion, was the one that was talking about how he couldn't get Lincoln made because, granted, he wanted like $60 million, but he was talking about what a hard time he was having getting that made. So that makes me wonder if that's even true for him.
Well, financed? I don't know about made. Finance is a different situation. He could have wanted $300 million for it. Maybe somebody doesn't want to pay $300 million for that. I bet you they'd give it to him for Robo-Apocalypse.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I guess it comes down to what you want. I like the definition that you gave. I do like that. In the end, I mean, for me, it always felt like a money thing. I hate calling anything that comes through a studio on a large budget and independent. There are films that have the spirit of, like, I really feel like District 9 was an independent version of a blockbuster film. That's a film that looked like it cost $200 million and he made it for like 30, something ridiculous, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, feels like what you're talking about, the heart of an independent filmmaker. I don't know if I buy Avatar as an independent filmmaker at work. Now, when you factor in the innovativeness, is that even a fucking word?
No, that's twice I've heard you say that recently.
Yeah, sorry. The innovation that went into Avatar and what Cameron was doing along those lines, then yeah, I could argue that he's tinkering in a larger toy box. So yeah, maybe that is independent filmmaking because he's actually coming up with new technologies for making films. That's interesting. That's an interesting discussion. Maybe that's for another day. But yeah, I can see that. But to me, at the heart of fucking what an independent film was the Sundance movie of the 90s to me.
I realize that that's what we have ingrained into us, but I would argue that Cameron is an independent filmmaker, whether we like it or not.
Has he been? I feel like Terminator is the only independent film he ever made. And I'm not even sure that he didn't have a decent budget for that.
I guess
he's poster boy for the summer blockbuster, dude.
I realize that, but they are not 100% mutually exclusive. If he has his own production company and has the financing to do whatever the hell he wants, whenever the hell he wants, and put it out there pretty much, if not totally, with his vision, Final Cut, essentially, how is that not independent? Just because it has a big budget and a studio is going to distribute it.
I don't know. Maybe
that's what it boils down to. No, it doesn't sound right. It doesn't feel right. But I think that
is
right.
How about this? How about this for like the same but different? Peter Jackson.
Yeah. I don't know if he has the kind of cash to finance his own productions. He might, but I don't know if he would.
I don't know that Cameron's funding his own productions.
You don't think the man who made Titanic, not to mention everything else he's made over his career, has the finances to make whatever he wants? It's not coming out of his own pocket. It's not coming out of his own pockets. It's coming out of his production company's pockets. Brad Pitt has a production company. Lots of people have their own production companies. Why wouldn't Cameron's have enough to finance his own films?
I mean, well, Cameron and Pitt.
That's essentially what Spielberg did with DreamWorks. Didn't really work for him because they tried to become Disney or Sony or what have you, but, you know.
UA. They wanted to be UA.
you know, that was the place where he would get to do his things, and then they would bring in other films as well, blah, 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 and produce their own stuff. But he would have been, at least for himself, not in our eyes, an independent filmmaker.
True.
I mean, I think what you're looking at is being termed independent is someone that does not have their own company. Someone who would not have...
No, because I just said the same thing about Peter Jackson. He's got Weta. He's got his own fucking studio. He practically owns New Zealand, right? He's like the king of New Zealand?
Right, okay.
So I don't travel much.
So you would say that he is an independent filmmaker?
Yeah, because... yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just wondering, how is that any different from Cameron?
It feels different. No, it does feel different. Because you know what's weird is... Lord of the Rings was an independent, like, fucking gamble of a lifetime. Like, Lord of the Rings, like, do you realize a studio hinged on the success of fucking Lord of the Rings?
Well, that's the thing I was just going to bring up, is that it was the studio and not Jackson that was hinged on.
True, but, okay, we've already gotten past the fact that monetary doesn't matter, studios don't matter, it goes back, we're going off the assumption of this article that you read off that it's the heart of the independent filmmaker, right?
No, it's about control.
Okay, about control. He fucking controlled that shit, and he still controls his shit, and now he's literally moved his operation to New Zealand and works out of his own fucking compound.
Well, I disagree with you there. I don't think he had control in the first one. I mean, I think he had respect, and I think they gave him mostly free rein, but if... I don't buy that for a second, that on the first Lord of the Rings film that he had total control, considering the stakes that were attached to it. He was not... He had not made a movie that had made even $20 million, I don't think, at that point.
No. But I just listened to... What did I listen to? I listened to a podcast with Elijah Wood being interviewed the other day. And he basically said they were off doing their own thing. I'm sure there were people there to keep the train on the tracks, as it were.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they literally put a lot of it in his hands.
They entrusted him, sure.
Yes, and it changed a lot between Fellowship and Two Towers, from what I understand.
That's what I would guess, yeah.
Which is kind of strange, because I think one hadn't been released, so they probably... My assumption from that is they saw his work and were impressed by it and said, okay, go do your thing.
That sounds right to me.
Yeah, but...
I'll bet they were really, really worried when they, you know, 2 weeks into it, into the first one, and then they saw dailies, and they saw what it looked like, and what he was doing, and they might have still been worried, but just that they were going to recoup their investment, but as they got further along, they probably knew that they had a gold mine on their hands, and after that, they were like, go do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, but I mean, does that change with someone like Cameron? You don't think Fox was a little concerned when Avatar was starting up, and then he showed them dailies and showed them what he was doing, showed them the technology, and they went, okay, go do your thing. You don't think they had a little bite their nails moment?
I think if you replace Titanic with Avatar, I would agree with you. But after Titanic, no.
Really? Because I seem to remember when Avatar was getting made, the budget was soaring. Remember, weren't there rumors that he was up over $400 million? At one point?
It's potentially, I don't recall. I mean, that kind of stuff happens on all the blockbusters.
Not $400 million. Like, I remember Superman Returns, like, they were getting up around $250 and everybody was getting really worried. But, I mean, there was reports that he was going over $400, $450 million, which is ridiculous. Because films don't make a fucking $1 billion. Some do. Nobody plans on a fucking $1 billion.
Right.
You can't do that. So, I mean, even some of these fucking go-to franchises in the comic book world, they don't even hit $1 billion. Not all of them.
Right.
But there was concerns there, and it was in the fucking trades, and you can fucking do an internet research, I swear to God, which would kind of be the same thing.
It would.
It means somebody was biting their fucking nails because they'd given somebody a lot of money to go do their thing. So there was other people involved in it.
Well, let's bring this full circle a little bit. And yeah. I think I know what you're going to say, but I figure it's worth asking anyway. Are the Coens independent filmmakers?
Absolutely.
Why? I don't think they're financing anything they do. I do believe they have... I would say yes, according to the definition that I read you, because I believe they have full control. They have such small budgets that nobody's going to really fuck with them so long as they continue.
Well, yeah, but they are also the ones that are pushing this mid-range adult budget, whatever we call it, mid-range kind of adult features that we were talking about.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're not working on the they're probably pushing $30 million on some of these. I'm sure A Serious Man didn't get $30 million, but I bet you know Country for Old Men did.
True Grit, maybe, yeah.
True Grit, maybe. I don't know. See, here's the thing. I bounced around a little bit in this because, A, we started talking about the money thing, and then, B, we started talking about the quote you had from that blog. Mm-hmm. You can kind of put parameters on this in many different ways, and then we could say, okay, well, then he goes here and he goes there. But ultimately, to me, it kind of comes down to a feeling. It just comes down to a fucking feeling, dude. It really does. Coens make Coen brother movies. And maybe that is the thing you were talking about, the control issue. Every Coen brother movie feels like a Coen brother film. Every film, I'm sure a few of those only cost under $10 million, and I'm sure some cost over $30 million. They all feel about the same budget range. They all have the same tone. They all have the same voice. They're making their films. And even when they did the film, like, what was the Burn After Reading with Brad Pitt and Clooney?
Yeah.
It didn't feel oversold or overhyped like every other fucking, like, Clooney or Pitt movie I see. You know what I mean? It just felt like it was in its world and it was their thing and they were doing their thing. And whoever was paying for it, I didn't give a shit.
Yeah, it's hard because I do think that it kind of goes with what you're saying. It depends on the filmmaker. So it's a little hard to define it broadly. It's kind of, you know it when you see it, almost.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking into their budgets on Box Office Mojo, and they don't have it listed for a lot of them, but most of the ones that are listed are around $35 million. But see, that's another reason why they're unique, is because they make these films, and they've been doing it for so long that they have this cachet that now their films make money. So,
yeah.
Burn After Reading made $60 million just domestically. I doubt it made much outside of that. But
which is a modest gross.
But for them, that's good money. And if they can throw in, if their movies make at least $30, $40 million with the cult following that they have and sales and yada, 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 or DVD sales and every other peripheral type thing, companies are going to continue to give them money because they are cachet. They will potentially get Oscar nominations, and they, so long as they don't lose money, they're going to get to keep doing whatever they want to do for as long as they want to do it.
Yeah,
yeah.
But they, here's the thing: like
they're like
Raising
Allen.
Arizona. Yeah, yeah. Woody Allen. Hey, I'm tempted to call him an independent filmmaker, man.
He's the same as them. They're in a small class, but that's the class they're in. They can do whatever they want. So long as they keep their budgets low, they can continue to do their thing.
They feel much more to me like if we're going to talk about what it is. And let's back up for 1 second. The true heroes and independent filmmakers out there right now are the, like we mentioned, Blaine Weaver, J.C. Curry, the guys that are going out and seeking $2 million to make a passion project, that are getting distribution through some of the best independent film distributors out there, like Film Buff, who we have a partnership with, or IFC Films. You know, they're putting out really good content for these really low budget films. Those are the true independent filmmakers right now. These guys that are on crowdfunding or crowdsourcing or whatever the fuck it's called, those are the guys that are in the trenches doing what we would call the quote unquote independent filmmaking. However, this gets into, like, kind of with bands, the whole thing about selling out. Just because Coen Brothers go and get $30 million to make a film, that doesn't mean they've sold out. It doesn't mean they changed anything. In fact, Raising Arizona and True Grit, they both feel like home to me. They both feel like home with the Coen brothers. So I don't have a problem with that. That is the spirit I'm looking for. Woody Allen found a lot of success. I'm not a particular fan. I know people that swear by him. The guy makes a film a year. Take it or leave it. It's what he does. He's prolific. God bless him. He's going to do that till he dies, and I think that's fucking amazing. That's independent filmmaking. The gray area, I guess, is when you get into these guys like the Camerons, the Spielbergs, the Lucases. They're operating on another level. I would almost argue Lucas is more of an independent filmmaker because, if anything, he's doing everything through his own name and his own studio.
Yeah.
Even that piece of shit, Red Tails, he put the money up for it.
Right. He has money coming out of his ears, so yes, he can do everything. I think he wants to do everything absolutely himself.
I think he does. The problem is, we have all watched his independent, like, whatever that talent was when he was independent, be sucked out of him. If anything, I see it more in someone like Spielberg, who is kind of like, I mean, was a studio head at one point. So in a way, he's operating on a different plane, but he still feels independent of me. Scorsese does as well. You know, I don't know. It's a feeling.
I got a feeling.
Woohoo!
My feeling is that it's time for takeaways.
My takeaway is that James Cameron is not a fucking independent filmmaker. You?
The only feeling I can come up with is I got a feeling I need more cowbell, but that doesn't really tie into our conversation. My takeaway is that I can't think of the proper analogy, but independent filmmakers and independent filmmaking is something that you know it when you see it. And more than anything else we've talked about, it's just you kind of recognize it when it's there.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Wrap we'll see these people next week? Yeah?
2 weeks.
Yeah, let's do it then. My name's Kai.
I'm Dylan.
Well, fuck off then.
What?
Oh, piss off. That's much more polite.